Looking for strategies to help you protect your portfolio in these uncertain times? Visit robblack.com. robblack.com, powered by EP Wealth.
Welcome in. What did we have? Something amazing like October, November, December, January, February, March. It was November when the rally started, six months roughly. And then things fell apart a little bit, and we've kind of got a little bit more, like, to tell the truth. Who's going to stand up and be the leader? It's earnings season. That's what we're looking for. The market's had a little bit of a tough spell recently. The S&P 500, the NASDAQ, had declined for six straight sessions, a streak that ended yesterday. Not with a resounding rebound, not with anything like, boom, it's over, we're back. It was a rebound. The day-to-day is the wrong way to look at investing. The right way is to look at it 1 year out, 3 years out, 5 years out, 10 years out. And are you doing well? And in the down years, are you outperforming or underperforming? Less is probably the right way of thinking about that. A decent-sized batch of earnings results have been released since yesterday's close. They were mostly better than expected, including reports from General Motors, GE Aerospace, Danaher, Kimberly-Clark, PepsiCo, and UPS. GE Aerospace has been spun off from GE. One point in time, GE was one of those companies in the 1950s that was just like, hey, let's add another component. Let's add biopharmacals. Let's add aerospace. Let's add TV. Let's add movies. And then through the last 25 years, it's been slowly picking apart the pieces that were the best and spinning them off. Tesla's got a big earnings report tonight, as does Dow component Visa. Visa gives us a lot of insight into what people are spending on and how comfortable they are opening their wallets. What's in your wallet? March new home sales report came out this morning. We'll hit that briefly a little later. Nothing really game changing there. The new home sales data and auction results on the bond market are going to probably be the economic data that we look at today. But it's really the earnings season that I'm looking at, and then the PCE on Friday. So for the rest of this week, we've got some business, as I like to say. Beauty is my business. No, beauty is not my business. Stocks are my business. Meta's, who do we got? Spotify is up 15% after surpassing the estimates and issuing a rosy second quarter guidance. Look what happens when you announce 25% headcount reduction. Stocks move higher. Spotify probably looked at what Meta was doing and said, yeah, that's a pretty good idea this year of efficiency. Tesla's going to report earnings after the bell, followed by Meta platforms on Wednesday, Alphabet and Microsoft on Thursday. Big stat of the week. 29%. That's the tech percentage, the percentage of tech jobs held by women, 29%. So I guess if you're a single woman looking for a single man, it's a good field to work in. But if you're a single man looking for a single woman, a little bit tougher. I know everything's not about dating, but it is on today's show. In the overall U.S. workforce, women make up 49% of the workforce, but in tech, just 29%. Back to Meta. Meta's Quest headset is opening its VR operating system called Horizon Operating System to third-party developers. They say Asus and Lenovo are both planning a Meta Horizon operating system compatible headset this year. So basically Meta is saying, yeah, we got outclassed by Apple on the hardware for the Vision Pro. And we're not going to compete on the hardware side. We'll just be the operating system side. It's a big business move, and I think it's probably the right one. Tesla's D-Day is here. Tesla's stock has crashed, falling 40% this year. Earnings tonight might be able to salvage shares, might not. I'm not betting on it. They're going to have to talk about their pricing strategy. Big negative for the company. Demand for its EV, big negative for the company. Self-driving software, I won't believe it till I see it. So big negative for the company. And the coming robo-taxi event that they're announcing in August, they're not going to be ready for that. Sorry, but when you don't even have permits to be on the road, you ain't going to be launching a robo-taxi platform. But hey, all the Elon Musk wonder fanboys, maybe they'll buy it. Speaking of buying stuff, Blue Milk from Star Wars hit shelves ahead of May 4th. I know. I'm not even that much of a Star Wars fan, but I think this is kind of funny. Get your dairy from a galaxy far, far away, the Blue Milk. It's been exclusively available at Star Wars Galaxy Edge in Disney Parks. Luke Skywalker can be seen drinking the blue milk in Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. He also drank green milk in Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. Interesting how product placement in movies, and it wasn't even product placement because we didn't say we invent this, but a small farming collective started selling them for Disney a couple years back. And out of the movies comes a product, right? Now, Amazon, they want to sell more stuff and they want to sell more advertisements. I don't know if you watched the game last year on Black Friday. It showcased QR codes with exclusive deals during commercial breaks. That's kind of like step one. Step two is going live right now. This week, they introduced a shoppable, free, ad-supported QV-style channel to Prime Video. Get this, 75% of us are looking at a mobile device while we're watching television. I once heard a statistic that over 50% of Americans have looked at their phone while enjoying whoopee with their partners. But 75% look at their mobile device while watching TV. I'm guilty of that one. Now, the new channel, again, it's going to be a QVC-style ad-supported. It's going to allow you to shop and engage with content that you're watching on TV through your mobile device. But you're going to be watching it on your TV, and you're going to have your mobile device in your hand. They've gotten celebrities, influencer creators, and brands like Layla Kent from Vanderpump Rules, Taste Made in the Bump. 24/7, if you want to shop in the middle of the night, you can. Viewers can add items directly from the stream to your cart. Peacock, Disney, TikTok, Walmart, and others will launch shoppable TV services soon thereafter. A little discouraging, but not too bad, right? It's a shame that we can't just watch TV and get commercials the way we used to. But I get why tech companies are doing. You do too. It may not be something we terribly like, but it's something we terribly understand. They're trying to squeeze every dollar out of us. Better than expected earnings results are helping the industrial sectors in focus today on Wall Street. Leadership of mega cap stocks and small cap stocks is nice after six down days. Now, again, we had five up months. Which would you rather have? Well, you'd take them both. You would take both of those. Russell 2000 is up 1.8%. The S&P mid-cap up 1.3%. The Vanguard Mega Cap Growth ETF, also known as MGK, is up 1.3%. The Russell 2000 is down 5.8% month to date. So we're in April.
One.
And the small cap sector is getting murder-related, as is the S&P mid-cap, down 4.8%, and the mega cap growth down 4.3%. So the biggest losers of this month are seeing some shoppers step up to the plate. You have the president on trial continuing today. That may be a market mover in some way, shape, or form. I haven't quite put a finger on that. But there's a big event coming up May 9th, 30. A couple days after May the 4th. It's May 9th, Palo Alto Elks Lodge, Palo Alto, California, 6:30 to 8:30. It's a Thursday evening event, the Wealth Preservation Retirement Planning, featuring CFP Chad Burton and myself. It's going to be all about wealth preservation and retirement planning. It's Thursday, May 9th, 6:30 to 8:30. Tax planning, retirement costs, transition your portfolio, investment account, social security, retirement products, 401k ideas, estate protection, much, much more. Ideal if you have $500,000 or more of investable assets. Sign up today at robblackshow.com. That's robblackshow.com.
Maybe you feel like you're in good shape for retirement, but have you really taken everything into account? Find out how you're really doing at a wealth preservation and retirement planning event May 9th in Palo Alto, hosted by Rob Black and CFP Chad Burton of EP Wealth Advisors. Rob will provide timely commentary, and Chad will share specific strategies for taxes, income, long-term care, safe money, retirement products, alternative investments, estate protection goals, and more. If you have at least $500,000 in investable assets and want to retire better, pass on your estate, and minimize taxes, this event is for you. Find out if you're on the right track at this free wealth preservation and retirement planning event. That's Thursday evening, May 9th, 6:30 to 8:30 at the Elks Lodge in Palo Alto. Space is limited, so sign up today at robblackshow.com. That's robblackshow.com.
I was looking at Verizon's earnings. It's one of the ones that I kind of missed. So I was catching up on it. Verizon, I used to look at as a tech company, and my thoughts have changed. I looked at them as basically making everyone in America want a wireless phone contract. Sometimes Verizon and AT&T would subsidize the Apple iPhone to get you to sign a 2-year deal. They still have various situations like that. Unfortunately for investors, the narrative doesn't really improve now that we're 20 plus years into the 2000s. I feel like Verizon's best days were like the late 90s to 2010, maybe. The company recently lost a net 158,000 users in its consumer wireless postpaid phone business. That was actually a significant improvement year over year. That's not sounding good. Its business group users had additions of 90,000, were down about 33% year over year. Represents about 20% of the revenues at Verizon. Operating revenue is impressive, $33 billion, but it lagged expectations. Free cash flow, $2.7 billion. Sounds great, but it was expected to make $4 billion. They said something magical. They said the management expects cash flow to improve in the second and third quarters. They maintained their 2024 outlook. The only reason, and this isn't even, I wouldn't even do it. There's no reason I would want to buy Verizon in and of itself. Maybe if they were like to have a serious dislocation. But this used to be a tech company. It's not lost on me that when you used to look at the hierarchy or the ecological chart of tech, Verizon was part of the players. You know, Verizon would be selling equipment to the telcos. Verizon was buying the equipment because they were one of the telcos. From the semiconductor equipment maker, not the semiconductor equipment, telecommunications companies like Cisco and companies like Lucent. This used to be a player. Then it has a lovely dividend yield, but I'm not going to touch it. Its dividend yield is 6.8%. Sweet, right? Wrong. In the last 5 years, the stock's gone from $60 down to $40, essentially. Even though it has a nice dividend yield, it ain't worth it for me. And maybe if I was like 70, I can't even say that. If I was really old and wanted the dividend for the last few years of my life, I still don't want to lose the equity. I'd rather sell the stock per se and use the equity for cash. But again, things change. That's all I'm trying to say. And sometimes you have to kind of give yourself that wiggle room. Now, one area that doesn't change, and this one's pissing me off today. I don't know why I'm so fired up about this one. Tell me if you're fired up. Booked a flight for the family, of which I'm not going on. So this even pissed me off more. First, we saw baggage fees with airlines, right? Now, they're taking advantage of anxiety of parents who want to sit with their kids and kids who want to sit with their parents. And adults who want to sit with each other, friends, family, lovers, I don't know. A seat assignment used to come at no extra cost, right? Now seat assignments are a lot of logistical and financial puzzle, and it sucks. It dawned on me late in the process, like, oh, they're going to make me pay for a seat. And even though I've paid for a seat assignment in the past, it dawned on me, like, they're going to make me. Airlines have tricked out seat maps. They've added fees nearly everywhere, even middle seats. Middle seats! It's not just the budget airlines like Frontier, Spirit, and Allegiant, which we know they do. It's also American, Delta, and United. Prices range from $40 one way for an ordinary seat to $90 for an exit row. For international flights, it can be an extra $250 round trip. And you don't discover that cost until you're in the passenger information part. It's something Joe Biden would call a junk fee or a hidden fee. Now, airlines have done better about showing us the baggage fees up front. But we've all gotten kind of used to them, right? Baggage fees brought in $5.1 billion for domestic airlines last year. Seat fees brought in $4.2 billion. That ain't too shabby. Now, every now and then you'll get on your TikTok or your YouTube videos or Instagram and you'll see someone rage. You should let me sit with my boyfriend. You suck. And you'll see just this rage come out of people. And don't ask for my seat ever again. I'm not going to go change seats to a middle seat for you if I paid for an end seat. It's going to be a big flat no. And everyone else is going to be the same way. So when you book your flight, pay the extra money for the seat assignment. Don't ask other flyers to change for you, because it's going to end in a lot of rage, which is pretty funny to watch. As long as, you know, kids aren't involved. Oh, but there's always kids on flights, right? Raging, man. Whoa. So Pepsi came out with earnings this morning. They beat expectations, but some product recalls, weaker lower income consumer, have hurt U.S. sales. Earnings were 9 cents better than expected. That doesn't mean much to you. Revenue was $18.25 billion. Income was about $2.04 billion. It's pretty good income. Net sales rose 2.3%. That excludes acquisitions because that'd be kind of a cheap way of looking at it. A recall of Quaker Foods cereals and bars worsened Pepsi's volumes problem. This is one of those companies that could get hit aggressively over the years, or maybe not aggressively, let's just say moderately over the years, from the GLP-1 inhibitors and Lilly's and Novo Nordisk product. Pepsi is down about 2.2% today. In the last year, it's gone pretty much so lower, pretty aggressively, from almost 200 down to 172. Pays a nice dividend of almost 2.9%, but not great when you look at the stock market compared to it. You can find me online at Rob Black Show. Don't forget to sign up for that event on May the 9th at robblackshow.com.
Don't want to work forever? Check out the Retirement Planning Guide on robblack.com. That's robblack.com, powered by EP Wealth.
So I do have that big event coming up on May 9th. When you turn 50, 55, I think it's really important to start learning what financial planners do. If you choose not to hire one, I think that's on you. I don't think you'll be able to do everything a financial planner can. CFP Chad Burton will be going over things that you need to do at age 50, 55, 60, 65. It's really not for someone who's younger than that, per se, because you're still accumulating wealth instead of managing it. That's why the event's called Retirement Planning and Wealth Management. Working with a fiduciary, a financial advisor, it can increase your returns by over $1.7 million, depending on when you start with a $500,000 portfolio. If you assume 5% annual growth of $500K versus 8% over 25 years, it equals $1.7 million. It's a lot of money, and I'm seeing more and more Americans just not saving enough. And again, it's weird because 10, 20, 30 years ago, I didn't really see that. Now I'm seeing it in friends and family members, if that makes sense. One of the things that I'm doing with a CFP right now, I'm not doing Social Security. I don't need to. I'm still too many years away from it. But that's something they offer, Social Security analysis. I'm doing a lot of tax efficiency planning, which, trust me, I cannot do on my own. I've got a couple highly concentrated positions that are underperforming this year. One of them is underperforming. One of them is outperforming. But I'm doing an option overlay strategy, which is pretty complicated. It's not just buying an option and going away. It's buying four or five options at the same time and managing them and buying them back, sometimes at losses, to help create your tax loss efficiency, except to offset the gains. I'm very pleased with my results. So that's an income stream that ultimately I could decide, do I want to unwind my highly concentrated position? Companies like Apple, NVIDIA, Microsoft, you know, people have made a lot of money in certain select few names. I know a guy who's got $4 million in Costco because he worked there. I love that. But he should be doing an option overlay strategy, in my opinion, because otherwise he's just holding it and getting a dividend, or he can sell some, pay some capital gains and reinvest, or he can use an option overlay strategy, which creates income on top of the dividend and lets him hold the underlying asset. Of course, there's always risks and issues that you need to think about, but I like alternative strategies to balance my stock market risk and exposure. I like passive income streams, and one of them is that option overlay strategy. Another one is dividend stocks. Another way to get income in retirement where you own a stock and it pays a dividend. Like last quarter, Meta said, hey, we're going to start paying a dividend. And stock went up 20% because people feel comfortable. I could own that long term, and to get the dividend is pretty sweet. Another one is to own REITs, real estate investment trust. You can own private REITs, or you can own publicly traded REITs. I like them both. What I do not like are the private REITs that are not institutionally managed, but are kind of regionally managed by, I'm not going to say a charlatan, but I've seen a lot of bad REITs. The private ones that are that I like are more institutionally, and they won't even deal with people like you and me, retail investors. They'll only deal with people who have a financial planning community behind them that can raise billions of dollars. But owning rental properties is a great way to generate retirement income. I've got one listener. He owns 12 properties. And he wants to become a client, but he's always off and running trying to fix the rents or trying to fix the walls or trying to get a tenant in. I'm like, why don't you institutionally swap those individual properties, 1031 in them into an institutional REIT, and let other people professionally manage them? And you'll get the 1031 exchange, which is sweet because you're not paying the capital gains. But you'll also get the professional management and the dividend that comes with it. I don't understand people that have more than two or three rental properties and manage them on their own. It's too much work. So there's a national radio show that talks about doing it. I would prefer more of an institutional approach. Municipal bonds. In some of my retirement accounts, just to keep things honest so that I don't have too much exposure to growth, some California municipal bonds have been added where I don't pay taxes because I'm a citizen of California. So I don't pay state income taxes on it, which is 2.3% return, like a 3% return when you're not paying taxes on it. So it's setting in those passive income streams, I think, is really, really important. And I'm kind of there. Oftentimes on the show, you'll hear me say, I got about 18 months left of seminars, then I'm going to probably pull back. I've got my income stream set up if I need it. I still have the growth in my portfolio if I want it. But that's the golden goose, to get to that X amount of dollars that you have envisioned in your head. It could be $100,000 a year plus Social Security. Social Security, keep in mind, is going to cover basically your Medicare costs. So Medicare, I think, was running about $23,000 last year, and it's about $20,000 to $24,000 in Social Security that you're getting. Of which, on top of all that, you're going to spend another $400,000 as a couple on medical costs in retirement. So you really got to have some income coming in, or you need to have $2, 3, 4, 5 million in assets to live off, depending on your budget. $2 million on the lower side of a budget, $4 or $5 million if you're looking for, you know, $100,000+ a year. And again, if you have poor health, you're going to end up in the poor house. It is expensive in retirement. So, and just to show you how I've evolved, when I was in my 20s, I wanted $1 million by the time I was 35. I wanted to live on the beach with a beautiful woman and sell oranges and lucky go free, you know, kind of thing. And then you fall in love and you're like, uh-oh, I think I need $2 million. That'll pay me and her about $80,000 a year. And when I say I need, now she had $1 million coming into it, and I had $1 million, we're there. But rarely do both partners end up savers. One's not a spender, you know, kind of thing. And then when you have kids, you're like, oh, private schools are expensive. Again, we've got a pretty good public school infrastructure in the United States. Some people would say it's deteriorating on some levels. Like, I don't understand the public school system in California because the cost of living is so high. It's tough to ask a teacher to say, you know, you're basically be poverty or close to poverty or you're gonna have two or three roommates. Is that living? Is that living? So anyway, it's nice to see what's happening. If you want ever to discuss financial planning, I usually set up aside 2 30-minute appointments a day to talk to people about what financial planning can and won't offer you. Reach out to me at rob@robblackshow.com. It's rob@robblackshow.com. Again, I'm deep into the financial planning world now as a user, and just throwing it down there. Oh, this was kind of an interesting statistic. Do you want to live near your state's top schools? Okay, so you know your state's top schools, right? So stay with us for a second. The high cost of education begins long before kids start college. When parents look for a home to set down roots, they often seek the best public school districts. I've often said if you want to buy a home in the school district, you have to look at school ratings. Let's say, oh, I'm going to buy a house in X city. You got to go to the school ratings websites and find out which ones are 9s and 10s. That's where you want to buy a house, not at the 6s or 7s. To get to the 9s and 10s, to the better schools, you're going to pay nearly $300,000 or more on average, according to Zillow. The average U.S. home value is $353,748. While the average for the best district in every state is 86% higher at $651,662. There's a strong correlation between home values and school ratings. So if I were to put this in Rob Black terms, I don't want to buy a house in Stockton just to buy a house in Stockton. One of my exes had a house, apartment in Stockton. I'm like, why didn't you sell it and use that capital elsewhere? And she's like, well, I've been there for a long time. And I'm like, you're going to have lower quality landlords or tenants. School districts aren't great. If you buy more coastal areas, you're going to do better than if you're buying more inland over the longer term in appreciation. She didn't want to do it. We didn't work out. Is there a correlation there? In California, the average home value is $743,000. But if you want to buy in the most highly coveted school district in Palo Alto, the average home is $3.03 million. So that one's a little bit over that $300,000 above asking price, isn't it? That's $2.2 million over to get into the best school districts. Of which, I had a chance to settle down in Palo Alto. And interesting to say, I chose not to because of school districts. I wanted smaller class sizes, and I didn't want my kid competing against all the academic geniuses in California. Didn't want it. It's an odd thing to say, but it was very, very well thought out by me. I want more trees and smaller size campuses. A retirement expense of $413,000. Again, that's what you're going to assume, and Medicare is going to pay for everything you don't need. So keep that in mind. You can find out more about me and the event coming up at robblackshow.com. That's robblackshow.com. It's May the 9th, 6:30 to 8:30 in Palo Alto, an area I did not buy a home. It's a great chance for you to come on out and hang out 6:30 to 8:30. I'll be there a couple hours early. I'll stay an hour later, talk to you about financial planning. It's the Elks Lodge in Palo Alto. Easy parking, free parking. Sign up for the event May the 9th, 6:30 to 8:30 at robblackshow.com.
Brought to you by EP Wealth. This is the Rob Black Show.
So I love what I'm doing in my life. Thank you for listening. I've introduced you to a lot of technology ideas through the years. I've introduced you to how I created wealth. I'm working on starting up a new podcast that will be separate from radio. That'll be professionally produced with video component. Stay patient. I should have more information on that soon. One of the stocks that I own is going to report earnings tonight. I'll talk about that in just a second. But before I do, I want to talk a little bit about NVIDIA. I own that stock as well. So the GeForce RTX 50 series GPU rumors are starting to swirl. The next generation of the architecture, the 50 series, are coming right on schedule. NVIDIA hasn't officially provided any time frame. some of the people that are leaking some rumors right now are seeing at least the RTX 5090 and RTX 5080 by the time the holiday season kicks off. My son is working on computer science work at school in ninth grade. And he really, really wanted to have a cutting edge computer at home so he could practice some ideas. So he got a 4090. And again, we could afford it. If we couldn't, well, there's no way. But these GPUs are pretty high end. And it's really not about the semiconductor that is interesting to me and to him. It's about the software that gets powered by the GPU. It's just like the using AI's ChatGPT. It's great that we have this artificial intelligence platform, but it needs to leak over to software revenues. And this is the quarter that we're going to start holding these companies accountable. And one of the big winners in the AI world, which isn't terribly obvious, are companies that have a lot of content, whether it be Facebook that we give them content, X that we give them content, or whether it be professional companies like the New York Times and Reuters that pay their employees to develop content. You got to have a large model of samples so that it can do learning from it. But yeah, look for some new announcements on the new high-end GPUs for the consumers soon out of NVIDIA. Now, a company I wanted to talk about briefly that I own, and I don't expect you to own it. We're different people. I always want you to find something that's appropriate for you. I always want you to consult a broker advisor for taking action on any stocks I ever mentioned on the show. I like a credit card name that's not a credit card name. And what do I mean by that? I don't like cash. In fact, I kind of despise cash. Don't know how you feel about cash, but it's not my thing. I like cards. I find that they're cleaner. I know you're saying you're not worried about germs, are you? I'm really not that worried about germs. But I don't like not knowing how much money I have in my wallet. Because with the cards, I have all the money that I have access to. With cash, did you remember to pull it out correctly or not, kind of thing, right? So I own a company called Visa. It's a fairly substantial position for me. It's number 137 in the Fortune 1000 revenue ranks. It's one of the world's largest leaders in digital payments and boasts over 4.2 billion credit and other payment cards. But they don't carry credit risk. They just do the transaction. They're in over 200 countries, which I would consider that an international company. They facilitate global commerce and money movements across global networks of consumers, merchants, financial institutions, businesses, strategic partners, and government entities. I got to give a speech a couple of times at Visa, and their employees are fantastic. And I dated one of the employees, and she was fantastic. I feel pretty good that this is a company that tends to support themselves by buying some of the smaller tech companies that are trying to usurp them. For years and years and years, people are like, PayPal's going to put them out of business, or other companies are going to put them out of business, like Block. Hasn't really happened. Since 2000, you've seen income grow from $21 billion per year to where it is now at $32 billion and climbing. They have healthy dividend. Well, not a healthy dividend. It's a dividend. It's nice, but it's not healthy. It's not huge, like my hands. They've got great cash flow. Things that I look for, right? But now more specifically, and I just wanted to share with you because it's earnings season. What am I looking for tonight when they report? Consensus earnings call is for $2.44. Last year, they had $2.09. I want to see sales growth of about 8% to $8.62 billion. I expect net revenues growth in the upper, mid to high single digits. Company announced a seven-year agreement with Western Union. Under the deal, Western Union customers will be able to send money to their family and friends, eligible Visa cards and bank accounts in 40 countries. I want to hear a little bit more on that. This quarter, they announced that they've agreed to a settlement with U.S. merchants, reducing rates and guaranteeing no increases for at least 5 years. I want to hear a little bit more on that. It's $270 stock. One analyst at TD Cowen has a $320 price target on it, saying it boasts a durable high-margin business built on leading scale of global payment networks within a $45 trillion consumer spend that they believe retains healthy runway for digital payments and penetration. Active investments to raise exposure to new flows has expanded its addressable payment volume significantly, with Visa purchasing an incremental $200 trillion in non-traditional use cases for B2B, B2B, G2C, B2C, and P2P payments. Again, this isn't advice for you, but these are the strengths and weaknesses that I'm looking for. Anyhow, and anyway, what are the strengths and weaknesses in your financial plan? Big event coming up May 9th, Palo Alto Elks Lodge, CFP Chad Burton. We'll be doing a two-hour presentation. I'll get there an hour early, and I'll stay at least an hour late. And if you want to meet even beforehand, I can carve out a corner for us to chat. It's all about financial planning. Chad has a great presentation on tax planning, retirement cost, portfolio transition when you hit retirement, investment account, social security, estate protection, much, much more. You can learn much, much more about the event and sign up at robblackshow.com. It's robblackshow.com.
Maybe you feel like you're in good shape for retirement, but have you really taken everything into account? Find out how you're really doing at a wealth preservation and retirement planning event May 9th in Palo Alto, hosted by Rob Black and CFP Chad Burton of EP Wealth Advisors. Rob will provide timely commentary, and Chad will share specific strategies for taxes, income, long-term care, safe money, retirement products, alternative investments, estate protection goals, and more. If you have at least $500,000 in investable assets and want to retire better, pass on your estate, and minimize taxes, this event is for you. Find out if you're on the right track at this free wealth preservation and retirement planning event. That's Thursday evening, May 9th, 6:30 to 8:30 at the Elks Lodge in Palo Alto. Space is limited, so sign up today at robblackshow.com. That's robblackshow.com.